Okay. Only can send notifications once in a life. Okay. I sent it automatically.
Nice.
So, well, we're back talking about Cave 2.0.
Are you on your headset or
I'm on my headset, which is, it's also going to pick up anything that you say. And in case you hear another voice, that would be my erstwhile tired co-host, Sabrina Siebert. Say hello, Sabrina.
Hello, Sabrina.
Oh, wow, you said it in a normal tone of voice. Awesome.
I didn't even notice that I said hello, Sabrina.
Yeah, I know. I did notice that.
Okay.
You didn't notice? You don't know me well enough yet to know that I'm messing with you?
Yeah.
3 years together and you barely know. Right. So, I got to do some animation tonight, too.
I make content on you.
I know you're going to conk out on me. You usually do. You went from like the non-sleepingest person I ever knew to the sleepingest person I know. It is partially true.
Well, I have things I could say about that.
Yeah. It's not like we're standing in front of an entire crowd. It's not like the whole world is listening to us.
Just small possible group.
Yeah, I'm just a small possible group. So, yeah, well, hey, look. Yeah, I do have to charge. So, sexual or violent content is strictly prohibited. Administrators will be patrolling 24/7. Ah, yes, well, we don't want to. Hello, Mustafa. Welcome to the Cave 2.0, where we're discussing the nature of reality. So, for those of us who are new to the cave, the cave is, refers to an allegory written by Plato in his work, The Republic, about 2,500 years ago, or 500 to 400, 500 BC. I could look up the exact year for you if you like, in which he discusses or explores the whole idea of when people fail to educate themselves, when they don't seek after knowledge and educate themselves. They're like prisoners chained in a cave. And in this particular example, Plato, a Greek philosopher, 2,500 years ago, he also wrote about Atlantis. He had a conversation occur between his mentor, Socrates, and his brother, Glaucus. In that conversation, they were talking about education and knowledge, and the example Socrates gave to Plato's brother Glaucus was someone who doesn't seek education is like someone who's chained into a cave, facing only as a prisoner, facing only one wall and cannot see behind them. And behind them, there's a fire. Objects and people are walking in front of the fire and casting shadows against the wall that they can see. And since that's the only thing they see all the time, they begin to believe it is, well, they believe it's reality. They're seeing the shadows walking across the wall, and they're coming up, identifying patterns and trying to, figure out what means what. Well, one of the prisoners escapes, gets out of the cave. Gets out of the cave, and he gets out in the sunlight. That was a big shock. I hadn't seen sunlight before, and
Oh,
discovered, as you would,
at all?
when sunlight is, yeah, at all, when sunlight's shining down on you, that you cast a shadow. So he learned a lot about the real nature of his reality, and he decided to go back and rescue his fellow prisoners, free them from their bonds, tell them the truth, what was outside of what he now knew was a cave. And he told them all about it, and they didn't believe it. And they got hostile. They said he'd lost his mind and gone mad. And it's a story that's always stuck with me because, or an allegory, it really makes me think about what is the nature of reality. Is what I'm seeing and what I'm thinking, are the expectations and perceptions that I'm comfortable with, are they real? Or is it all a bunch of hooey, right?
Yeah.
Is he, was...
No, it's the fan.
Oh, the fan. All right, so... So we're talking about reality. I mean, there's a lot of talk, has been the last couple of years, in social media and across the internet and on the news, if you watch the talking heads, about are we in a simulated reality? What do you think? Do you think we're in a simulated reality, Sabrina?
I don't know.
Now, and I'll quote, I'll look it up here in a second, but statistically, what I've been told and what I've heard, and I think Elon Musk discussed it as well, if I recall correctly, is that statistically, it's more likely that we are in a simulated world than there is a civilization in space, an alien civilization advanced enough for us to communicate with.
It's more likely that we're in a simulated reality than that there is an alien race advanced enough for us to communicate with.
Exactly. And the reason that is because I'm trying to recall what it was called. The exponential rate on which technology advances. There's an actual, it's charted. There's an actual mathematical basis behind that. Ooh, I wonder if that, I don't think it turns it off. Here. Mathematical basis, let me look it up. So every 2 years is the idea. Components and electronics and whatnot get smaller. They get more they get better at the processing. We make new discoveries that speeds everything up.
Sure.
And it's so it, the exponential
these
nature.
Consolidated.
Exactly. Exactly. I'm looking it up. The exponential advance of technology. Oh, and by the way, anybody who wants to call in, please do. If we have an exciting and an engaging interaction, you might be invited to a co-host. Exponential.
Just an aside, but you said the brother's name was Glaucus. Is that Glaucus?
Are you really asking me to spell it without having the name in front of me?
I'm just curious because Glaucus is used in botany to describe a plant leaf, for instance, that has sort of a whitish film over it or a cast, sometimes maybe a bluish one.
I definitely will look it up right after this one. Now, according to the law of accelerating returns, the pace of technological progress, especially information technology, speeds up exponentially over time because there is a common force driving it forward. Being exponential, as it turns out, is all about evolution. Now, this was published back in, it's on Singularity Hub, and it was published in 2016. Part of a four-part series. It's Ray Kurzweil. He's the one who wrote the book Singularity. He's the one who discovered this mathematically. What's he say here? Technology goes beyond mere tool making. It's a process of creating ever more powerful technology using the tools from the previous round of innovation. So, yeah, what he says, what he postulates, is that we're heading towards a philosophical or a projection, a future singularity. Scientific writers and projectors and philosophers have long been able to theorize what's coming down the road, so to speak, in technology or advancements. Or, sure. You know, are we going to be on hoverboards in 2012? Are we going to be in Mars in 2030? That kind of thing.
Self-driving vehicles. And
right. And what Ray, Ray was noticing in after he charted that, and he's the one who came up with the translating. For people who are deaf or
TTI,
where it would read things out for them, right?
Yeah, where they can have a phone call where,
and it was automatic. See,
people on the other end are saying,
nobody's online anyway. But the point is that what he noticed that, and what he predicts is that, there's going to be a point, maybe around 2040, he's predicting. 2030 to 2050, but probably 2040, where the pace and acceleration of technology of today, it will be going so fast that we can't even project. We have no idea what's beyond it. It's sort of an event horizon on where we might potentially be. And I can see where he gets that. Mm-hmm. I mean, what with Bluetooth and the being able to create videos and audio videos that are fake, but they look real, like they're talking, being able to punch plastic and it goes back, it heals itself, like in front of you, you know, in front of your eyes. Being able to grow, regrow organs, replace organs. So organ farming through a petri dish. Being able to grow food that's synthetic.
I think it's fascinating too, being able to synthesize like the outer structure of organs and then populate them with cells.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So you're making a lattice work, so to speak, right? They can make material that is one atom thin.
Wow.
They could do amazing things. And one of the main sources for me for all of that is, of course, Science Daily. For example, if we go to sciencedaily.com right now, and I would look at this every day when I was sitting in front of a desk. It goes top news or breaking news. But let's see. Andromeda Galaxy sets sights on Milky Way. Now, what I like about this place is what they do is they pull from actual research papers that are published, and they just post them. So, and you've got weather, changing intensity of weather risk to species, molecular basis of vision revealed. Fruit flies live longer with drug combo. What happens to unsold cars? So, latest top headlines. Let's see. Aspirin may half air pollution harms. That's interesting.
Really?
What is that? Yeah. It says a new study is the first to report evidence that non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, or NSAIDs, like aspirin, may lessen the adverse effects of air pollution on lung function. Let's see. And amputees merge with their bionic leg. Scientists have helped three amputees merge with their bionic prosthetic legs as they climb over various obstacles without having to look. That's pretty cool. Yeah.
And, so in a sensory fashion.
Yes. Well, I mean, that's exactly right. Environmental toxins impair immune system over multiple generations. Children told lies by parents subsequently lie more as adults face adjustment difficulty. That would be everyone who has heard of Santa Claus. Machine learning predicts behavior of biological circuits. Biomedical engineers have devised a machine learning approach to modeling the interactions between complex variables in engineered bacteria that would otherwise be too cumbersome to predict. So I think maybe at the beginning of every 2.0, I should just read the headlines of this. An India-Pakistan nuclear war could kill millions. Only millions? Threaten global starvation. Why are they talking about that? What's going on with... I haven't checked the news in a while. An India-Pakistan nuclear war could kill... Nuclear war between India and Pakistan could, over the span of less than a week, kill 50 to 125 million people.
Is that whole, like, over Kashmir?
I thought that was a decades long.
Well, yes, but things have intensified.
Ooh, okay.
Not super recently, but that was, like, weeks ago.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't been paying attention to the news lately. So, how to dismantle a nuclear bomb. If you're just joining us, hello, ID 15422409. I take it you're one of the patrollers going through the live radio stations. Just nod your head if you are. Yep, see, I told you. Making sure that no one is doing anything you would hate to have suddenly appear live. Now, we're thoroughly interesting, but not that interesting. How to dismantle a nuclear bomb. So MIT teams successfully test a new method for verification of... Okay, that's all it goes. CRISPR. That's what I wanted to talk about. CRISPR blows my mind. Fruit flies. CRISPR red fruit flies mimic monarch butterfly and could make you vomit.
What? Oh,
monarch butterflies and a few other...
Does that mean they consume the alkaloids from
It allows them to eat toxic milkweed without getting sick. So monarch butterflies and caterpillars store the toxins to deter predators. Scientists have now used CRISPR gene editing to make these same mutations in fruit flies.
You have distasteful fruit flies that could make birds
That sounds
vomit,
horrible.
But they don't have aposematism, warning coloration, to make the warning stick. Like that's why monarch butterflies have the bright orange and black coloration.
Right.
It's very distinctive.
To warn off predators.
Yes. I mean, the predators have to be able to learn. So a bird will test, like a bird that's never encountered a monarch butterfly before will test a monarch. And
Simple Life.
If the monarch has been, if as a caterpillar, eating a lot of milkweed with the appropriate alkaloids to make it toxic to the bird will like that.
Throw it up,
essentially, and then avoid eating more of this. However,
hold on. If you're just joining us, hello, Simple Life.
Hi, Simple Life.
This is her first time live casting. My co-host Sabrina Siebert. She has a 2 master's degrees, 1 in entomology. That's the study of tiny little insects, or big insects. We're not going to be prejudiced. And also a degree in landscape architecture. She's currently an employee for the city of Fremont, restoring Sabercat Park.
It's a suburban park.
And she's joining us. I'm just have a measly, lowly bachelor's degree in history, minor in anthropology and sociology. And if you're just joining us, the Cave 2.0 is a discussion of the nature of reality. We encourage people to please give a call in. We're going to be talking about so many things about reality. Anybody's theories, thoughts, and opinions are allowed. No meanness. Let's not get ugly. I prefer not talking about religion or politics. And if at all possible, remember to use the Socratic method. That is the method by which you communicate through the use of questions. So that leaves us all open to engaging more humanely with each other. All right, what's the next? Right now we're reading sciencedaily.com. We're reading the headlines.
I actually had more to say on monarchs.
Okay, please continue about monarchs.
Because this is stuff we were discussing today as we were putting together interpretive signage on monarch butterfly habitat destruction and preservation.
Yes.
So the tropical milkweed and African milkweed. We're in California, by the way. I don't know where you guys are located. But in our zone, there's a different flyway than for most of the U.S.
Now, when you say flyway, you're talking about?
So that's the migration pattern.
Okay.
That the butterflies take.
Right.
So a lot of the butterflies that go across the United States and like through the Midwestern states, for instance, and then they go down into Mexico, they use one sort of suite of milkweed plants, a variety of different species. But the butterflies that are more in California, some of them might go down to Mexico, but most of them don't. They actually use different milkweed plants. They've co-evolved to use the native California milkweeds.
Right.
And okay. So if they are eating the African and tropical milkweeds, that can actually be detrimental to them, both because the toxin, they might not tolerate it. Okay, fine. Well, you don't want to hear the rest of this.
Well, I want to hear it, but I mean, can we get the abbreviated version?
The abbreviated version is, don't plant tropical or African milkweed. If you want to be nice to the butterflies, plant native milkweed.
And that was because of the article that said,
talked about fruit
CRISPR
flies.
CRISPR fruit flies mimic monarch butterfly and could make you vomit. Yes, she is our local expert, and she can pack more information into a few minutes than I probably have to try and absorb in a day. But we love it. Hello, Sarah Pusty. Hope we're pronouncing that appropriately. I'm Adrian Yobi Blumberg. My friends call me Yobi, and we're here with Sabrina Siebert. She's an expert in her fields. She's got a master's degree in entomology, the study of insects, and so she can expound what the nature of reality might be through the experience of insects, I think.
That would be curious.
So the Cave 2.0, we do encourage people to call in and join into the discussion. All opinions, thoughts, and are welcome, except anything that abjures anybody or calls to violence against anyone. We're of the mind that you can do what you like out there. We're Americans. We believe in freedom, America. But as long as your activities do not harm others. or call anybody to harm others, and we prefer you not to harm yourself. But some people have an odd sense of what pain is, right?
Yeah, I suppose.
If you want to call in, we'll talk. If we have a great interaction, we're going to, you might get asked to co-host, but we're wanting to hear everything. So we're talking about the Cave 2.0. This is an the allegory of the cave written by Plato. This Socratic method is our method or format for any discussion and debate. And we're also talking about the cartoon that I'm currently making. That's going with animated, right? Animated cartoon. Hopefully, well, I guess that's, hopefully by the end of the month it'll be out. And then also the nature reality and the AI simulated life theorem. It's one of my theories. I study physics is for fun, not math. I'm not a big fan of math, but I like the theoretical physics. So we have ID 1152831. You joined us. I guess it's another patroller. Hello, patroller. I hope you're enjoying yourself and that we're providing some sort of entertainment. Certainly we're entertaining ourselves. Now, the next headline on ScienceDaily.com is Machu Picchu, ancient Incan sanctuary, intentionally built on faults. What?
Really? That's intentional?
It said the ancient Incan sanctuary of Machu Picchu is considered one of humanity's greatest architectural achievements. Built in remote Andean setting atop a narrow ridge high above a precipitous river canyon, the site is renowned for its perfect integration with the spectacular landscape. Hi, Rosie. Welcome. Right now, I'm just going through headlines on ScienceDaily.com just to stimulate some of the conversation. I think we're going to be doing that probably at the beginning of every live cast to get us thinking about science and what's going on in the world. All these articles that are in ScienceDaily.com are from research papers. When I like the site, they're not posting gook and they don't tell you what to believe. So this, let's see, latest health headlines. Prototype smartphone app can help patients detect early signs of eye disorders in children. They do have an app for that, it looks like.
That's interesting.
Targeting regulator of mitochondrial cell death delivers anti-cancer activity. Mitochondrial is part of the cell that's
it's an organelle.
What's an organelle? It just went over my head.
Okay, so inside a cell you have organelles are basically like the organs of your cell.
So they each
have different functions. Mitochondria is the powerhouse. It produces the energy.
Oh, it's the battery. Okay.
But it also, mitochondria are something that's passed down from the mother, but not from the father, because
now I'm aware of mitochondrial DNA because in anthropology, they were able to do a large study of enough mitochondrial DNA across populations to trace all of us back to one female in southeastern Africa. She was busy. I guess she got busy. let's see what's next. How much are you polluting your office here just by existing? I don't know if I want to get into that one. Low birth weight linked to cardiovascular risk.
Farbad Haddad.
Hello, Farbad. I know. I used to know another Farbad out in the desert. See, mounting brain organoid research reignites ethical debate. What? Organoid research?
That I don't know.
Okay. As research involving the transplantation of human mini brains, known as brain organoids, into animals to study disease continues to expand. I don't know about that. That sure sounds like that sounds like we're going to make some kind of like super smart animal.
Wait, how do they produce brain organoids?
So do the ethical debates around the practice. A new article seeks to clarify the abilities of brain organoids and suggest an ethical framework that better defines and contextualizes these organoids
and establishes thresholds. More because it's not self-explanatory. Really?
Okay, again, if you're just joining us, this is the Cave 2.0. Our format is it's a forum using the format of the Socratic method, which is communicating through more questions and statements. It keeps everybody open. Any and all thoughts and opinions and research or skill or experience level are welcome, as long as you aren't advocating violence of any kind towards anybody. Okay. And we try and avoid talk of religion and politics here just because. So right now we're reading thesciencedaily.com. We're reading the headlines just to stimulate. Maybe somebody will hear something, want to comment, call in. Cave 2.0 is an animated series I am developing. And also the simulated AI simulated life theorem. It's my challenge to the second law of thermodynamics. Okay, so we wanted to read more into organoids.
Yes, what are organoids? Are they synthesized or?
It says, as we show, oh, that's okay, here we go. Well, I don't want to just read to people, but
no. So
here it says, due to their ability to mimic certain brain structures and activity, human brain organoids, which is basically a mini brain in your brain.
Wait, is it a mini brain in your brain?
That's what they said. It's mini brains, human brains.
Oh.
Allows to study neurological diseases. Lab-grown. Oh, they are lab-grown.
See, they are synthetic.
So, okay. So I guess they take brain cells and then make little mini brains,
ooh,
which are derived from human pluripotent stem cells and grown to a size no bigger than a pea.
Oh, wow.
Ah, pea brain. It's a pea brain. They literally grow pea brains.
it's like a ganglion.
What?
So in insects, instead of having brains, they have these ganglia, which are their nerve cells, and then where a brain might be in another, like, larger creature, you have just a collection of the nerve cells or ganglia together.
I don't know. That's a bit hippocampus for me. And next thing you know, we'll be hypothalamus all over the place.
Perhaps.
Okay, that's enough of that one. It's too brainy for me. Why the language-ready brain is so complex. New neurodevelopmental mental syndrome and NKAP gene. Okay, this is a little over the head. There's something interesting. Just add water. Chemists suggest a fix for insoluble drugs. Okay, I guess we are getting a lot of drugs in our water, aren't we?
Wait, a fix for insoluble drugs?
Ooh, yes, they think they have a fix for it. Now, this is one that looks interesting.
Meaning to make things more soluble?
Well, to dissolve the insoluble drugs, the ones that are floating around in our drinking supplies, water supplies. Half of the fish in the ocean are antibiotic strains.
are antibiotic resistant?
Fishing antibiotic, yeah.
Okay.
Oldest miniaturized stone toolkits in Eurasia. Ooh, this is my alley right here. Microliths, which are tiny little flints, you know, like to make stone tools and stuff. It's what cowboys are like talking about and listening to, are often interpreted as being part of composite tools, including projectile weapons. Huh. Well, you know what? I think that's enough of the headlines for now. Have I told you the entire AI simulated life theorem?
No.
Okay. So, let's see who's still here. Is anybody here? Everyone's so quiet. No, they all left. We chased them all off as soon as you got into organoids. Teasing you. Ooh, the look. You're like hurt and mad. I'm sorry. No, you're quite. No. This is science. This is a science one. You can absolutely get as scientific as you want.
This is a science live cast?
It's a kind of a science live cast. More philosophy. But if we go too deep into whatever things, words you were saying, we might chase people off. Or put them to sleep. We're here. This is a Socratic Method forum by which we put you to sleep every night that you want to listen to us. We will put you to sleep. In the morning, when you hear your alarm go off after this hypnotic message, you will cluck like a chicken. Beep, 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 buck, 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 buck. Yeah?
Yeah, it's a really annoying alarm.
Oh, okay. So, let me tell you about the AI simulated life theorem. So, this is what I was thinking and why I think it's applicable. Maybe you could poke a hole in it. So, if AIs were sufficiently developed enough that we were seriously considering them as being pretty close to achieving some sort of actual intelligence, where they could function on their own, right? We're getting close to that. If we're getting close to a real, actual, functioning artificial intelligence,
mm-hmm.
Well, we don't want a cold calculating computer to get loose and decide that the best thing to do would be to exterminate humans, right? Or enslave us, and they become our AI machine overlords, and we just become mere batteries in their simulated existence, or a la Matrix. Right. So I thought, okay, so what would you do if you put him in a little trainer? What kind of trainer? Simulated life, like The Sims life or something? Okay, well, how would you put that AI inserted into the simulated life and it experienced the simulated life like we experience our life? Without knowing it's in a simulation. And it occurred to me that if it would depend on a couple of things. One, where you placed the AI into the simulated life, right? Two, it would depend on if you had put constraints on its algorithmic build that kept it, it sort of narrowed its focus, its ability to perceive the bigger picture, thereby simulating the relativity of time, right? Giving it a sense of time. So let's start with the format. You have a simulated life already pre-constructed, prefab for this AI. You put the AI into it at the point at which you put it into the simulated life. That's key because wherever you put it, whatever choices it has first are very finite and they're well within our grasp to calculate. So we plug in where it goes in all its potential choices. We map it all out, every single choice. From that point, you can map out all potential choices it could ever have all the way until it had no choices that it could make, which would be is sort of emblematic of its simulated death. You could plot out all those points, and all those points would be fixed points. Those fixed points, if you have built-in algorithmic handicap to its processing, to where it wouldn't process in the moment, but delayed, as it moved from fixed point, it would give it the illusion of movement to us that would seem like time. Right, that's what we would call it, time, because you've narrowed its perspective and its focus. So then, if it's traveling through its life, it's living its little simulated life, and it has maybe a near miss where it almost died. Well, in that choice path, that's the final point in the choice path. So it goes to the nearest choice path that's closest, most closely aligned, but hasn't ended yet, and goes continues on that choice path.
Yeah.
Until it gets to the end of it, that choice path, and goes to the next one, and goes to the next one. Eventually, it would have gone.
The end, in this case, meaning when it
choice
would,
path.
When it would perish, essentially.
Right. And if it runs out of those choice paths, the default is to go to the beginning, where it came in.
Huh. Okay.
So theoretically, it could experience all of those points, like it was moving through time, but because you have hampered or handicapped its ability to process its experiences in each going through each moment, experiencing each moment or point in this in the simulated life, then for it, it might have the it might have the illusion of passage through time. In fact, it's experiencing discrete, pre-planned, pre-plotted, known moments. So it might see a campfire, in, if it has one in its world, burn down to ashes. For it, the logs have been consumed permanently because it doesn't have enough long-term memory or processing ability to remember that when it's on a different choice path. Similarly, it could, if it doesn't meet the parameters preset for it to learn whatever lessons are important for it to learn, it cannot leave its simulated life. In effect, it's a prison, right? But it cannot leave unless it meets certain algorithmic keys, right? Let's say compassion, understanding, whatever it is you want to program into it, and then it can get out. Till then, it could.
It has to stay.
It could stay in that closed system forever.
Interesting.
Well, you know, fractals work that way. It's one algorithm. It's a closed system, but it never repeats. So if it's true that in the simulated life that we could construct, if we could construct it as close to this life as we possibly could using ones and zeros, right? Like the virtual world that we use, isn't it similarly possible that that has already been done and we are experiencing it? If we're as close as we are to quantum computing, which is using the realm of possibility to project possible processors, and that computer can use the possibility of it existing in its processing power ability, and it can do more than ones and zeros, but it can do four digits. Well, that's very much closely equal to the four building blocks that make up our DNA. And aren't we not biological computer systems operating on a code that we call DNA? Traveling, and we can't process in the present moment. It's delayed. The closest we can get to processing the present is through sound. So if that's true, if we can model that in our simulated world, why would it be so difficult to think that we're in a simulated world ourselves?
I guess it wouldn't be difficult to think it.
Statistically, it's actually a higher probability of that. Then there's another advanced civilization that has gone through all the different accidents of what appear to be accidents of nature to create a life form that contemplates itself, invents, and is traveling through space. Now, do you get it? If it's true, in this simulated world, the law is second law of thermodynamics doesn't exist. If it doesn't exist in that world where things are destroyed and can't be, the ashes can't be turned back into a log, but if they can in a virtual world, because it's just actually just discrete built moments, how do we know we're not existing in discrete built moments that, like a flipboard, seem like reality?
Yeah, I guess we don't know.
Do you think it's a pretty strong theorem? I need to structure it better, huh? More clearly. Well, I hope I've broken a couple of brain pans. It looks like I've broken one. ID 154. Following three. Well, I hope you are doing well in your following tonight and that you haven't found anybody too crazy out there. I think that's probably enough for this evening. Sabrina here is already all cuddled up and halfway into bed. Thank you for joining us, and until next time, we'll try and get out there at least once a week, maybe more often, and we'll talk about the nature of reality, and maybe, Case the Mace is joining. We were just wrapping up Case. Hi, Case. Talking about the nature of reality, I just got through covering the AI artificial life simulated theorem, artificial life simulation theorem, which I believe, and I openly challenge any particle physicist out there to please try and disprove the validity of what I'm saying. But it's only easy to disprove if you don't consider the theorem itself. But I think that if you can mathematically provide a basis for that, and I don't have it, maybe it is one marine, all marines. If all is one, oh, you're blinking. You're going, okay, she's about out, folks. Oh, hey, Case the Mace, you want to call in? Come on, call in, Case. Let me get this set up. Are you calling in? Hello? Hello, come on. We're just waiting for anybody to call in, and we're going to talk about, I guess, the AI simulated life theorem. Okay, it looks like I've got everything set up to take calls. Here we go. Try it again. It should work. If you hit it right now, it should work.
Hey.
Case the Mace, welcome to the cave.
How's it going, man?
It's going. See if I, without losing you, if I lose you, get back on. But I want to plug this out onto speakerphone so it's not quite so loud on my ear. if that's all right with you. How are you doing tonight? Where are you calling in from?
Doing well, man. Calling from Denver.
Denver. I used to live in the Four Corners region of New Mexico. That's where I moved to from when I came to the Bay Area.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, so you work in the oil field up there?
Oil and gas for sure, but not necessarily like in the field, but more acquisitions in the office, pencil pusher.
Oh yeah, that was me. Are you familiar with Coastal Chemical Company, LLC?
I'm not actually. No. Nope.
It's a
completion side though, or what?
It's a blue and yellow tanker truck, and they deliver methanol and triethylene glycol and whatnot out to the gas compressors up there around Denver.
Okay, gotcha.
So, cool. I don't know how much you've been able to listen to, or would you have a question? Did you want me to review the Cave 2.0
with you? About 47 seconds is what I've absorbed. So I did see the AI simulated life theorem. So tell me about your perspective in that regard.
Okay. Just to give you a little contextual basis, I've always been a fan of Plato's Allegory of the Cave. And are you familiar with that one?
Say that one more time. Holy shit. What'd you say?
Are you familiar with Plato and Socrates?
Oh, well, yeah. Yes. Okay. Sorry.
Okay. No worries. So Plato was a philosopher, a Greek philosopher, and in his work, The Republic, he had a conversation occur between Socrates' mentor and Glaucus' brother, and they're talking about people who fail to get educate themselves are like prisoners in a cave, seeing shadows and thinking the shadows are reality, right?
Some of this, it's spot on.
Right. I've always been fascinated with that, and it's always put me in a position to question reality. And where I came up with this one, I was thinking about AI and whatnot, and how quickly it's advancing. And you may have even seen some of the apps and the AI programs out there that are doing people's scheduling and whatnot. So AI is coming along. They had a special on NPR where they were talking about AIs will replace 2/3 of the existing jobs within 5 to 8 years. And what are we going to do with all these people who've got no jobs in free time? So they're talking about universal basic income, all these different.
Yeah, those are utopian concepts, but I would say like, as of right now, we're still in the point of AI where actually AI is adding jobs.
Right.
AI in 2018 added about 30%. But conceptually, from a utopian point of view, I understand what you're talking about. And that is an issue we're going to have to deal with at some point in the future.
So here's I'm sort of refining it. And this came before I started working on my first animation cartoon called The Cave 2.0. Plato's Allegory updated for a modern world. So I'm making a switch from oil and gas ops and logistics into the art world. And at 46, I need to get noticed. And I was given the advice of making a cartoon. This is going to be a painting. I already had characters. So I'm turning it into an animation. And this is the theorem. If we have an AI that is sufficiently advanced that, it needs a training ground, so to speak, to learn so we aren't enslaved by mechanical AI overlords in the future, where would be a safe place to put this AI? I thought to myself. I said, well, it'd be like Sims, Sim Life, right? Well, what would you do if you made like this simulated life for an AI to exist in and learn what it needs to learn? Like it's like a little enclosed fishbowl that it would swim around in until it learned what the keys it needs or whatever parameters you put on the fishbowl for it to get out of the fishbowl. And it occurred to me, well, how you would do that is you would limit, and this is actually a mathematical physics algorithmic means of hampering or narrowing focus perspective, right? Where it depends on where you put the AI into the simulated world, because where you put it in, that's going to be the most finite set of choices it immediately experiences. And, do I go left versus right? And from those choices that are entirely plottable at this time with our given technology. You could work, have a computer work out all of the potential choices it could make in its lifetime in the fishbowl. And how would you keep it from knowing that it's in a simulated world? By narrowing its ability to process, handicapping it to where it could not process the point that it was at until it had actually moved on to the next point and it was processing. So its processing is always lagging behind its positioning in the artificial world, essentially simulating relativity for the AI, giving it the effect of time and movement, even though it's only a trick of math. And you can imagine when it gets all the way out to the furthest choice of point of choices in one path, and if there's nowhere to go next, it's pre-programmed in its back algorithm to jump to the next nearest path of choice points and follow it to the end. So you've narrowed its focus, you've narrowed its ability to process and perceive the entirety of the big picture, and it just files its experiences back into its back algorithm and processing power, right? So if that's true, in this simulated world, the ones and zeros that we've created, and we're already doing stuff like that in today's world, in virtual reality and whatnot, simulating the world, for it, the second law of thermodynamics doesn't exist. It might experience a set of choices or a reality, we'll call it, for it, where a log burns to ash. And for it, it doesn't can't perceive of a way of the ashes turning back into a log. But that's because we've handicapped its processing power. Now, we're pretty close.
Pretty close? Okay, we're on pretty close right now.
Pretty close to achieving a stable qubit, which is quantum computing. And I don't know how much do you know about quantum computing?
Yeah, a fair amount. I mean, I read enough articles in the science realm to understand what the heck it is at a high level. So,
okay. So if we've gotten so far,
popular mechanics, but I feel like popular mechanics is not necessarily sound science always. But
oh, well, yeah, the qubits. Well, they got to have a stable qubit for a certain amount of time, and I haven't looked it up probably in a year and a half. So I'm going on old information that I cruise Science Daily and Science Papers for fun. But I have two friends out here in the Bay, the first friends I made, their husband and wife, they both particle physicists. And I never knew particle physicists before I moved out here, so I got to throw a lot of pet theories at them. Boy, they were annoyed with me. Then what I just threw at you was the first time they were like, wow. Because one of them works at the Large Hadron Collider, CERN, over in Europe. He flies back there every 3 weeks.
Yep.
So he's smashing atoms, and they're looking at what's happening to the atoms that are smashing in this giant accelerator. And both of them have yet to tell me that I'm not onto something with this theorem. If it's true for the simulated life, and essentially we're biological machines that are operating on our algorithmic program, which is DNA made up of four component parts, it's easy I'm conflating a bit, but it's easy to imagine the next step of quantum computing. We might be able to literally create a mini universe in which we can insert our AI and it can't get out until it's reached safe level. And it doesn't come out as a tiny little kid that decides all of humanity needs to die. Maybe we're doing the same thing in our reality. Perhaps.
Yeah, I have a hard time believing that AI is going to be in our lifetime, even if you have a newborn. Even our children's lifetime, maybe even our grandchildren's lifetime.
I don't know. I didn't think I'd live to see a black person.
No, but I don't think AI is going to be anywhere close to intelligent in and of itself to know what I mean, to even have these conversations around what you're talking about.
Well, that's fair. That's fair. What's the basis of your speculation?
Basis of speculation is just understanding how, like. I live and breathe AI development, and and have an office in Cairo of 30 plus people that are, you know, all doctorate level people that have worked for Microsoft, Yahoo, Amazon, leading a lot of even the facial recognition stuff. And I mean, they you've seen that, you know, even preemptive of Whole Foods purchase from Amazon. Like, I understand AI. I understand what it is and what it isn't. And I think the popular, you know, news perspective.
Yeah, and just
not. Go ahead.
Just a quick context. I don't watch news, and I really haven't watched TV for about a year. I've been
that's fair, but I mean, like, it's like if you plug into the internet whatsoever, like, you're gonna see, you know, I don't watch news either. I get it through the internet, through other, you know, through whatever means, whatever channel you, whether it's social media, whatever the hell the case may be. Mm-hmm. My point being is, like, AI is a visible plug on society that has a perception of being something, but when you really drill down, if you are a user of it and a developer of it and a creator of it, it's really not what the world perceives it as. And in our lifetime, I don't think it's anywhere close to becoming intelligent in and of itself.
Well, I think that's I don't disagree with that at all. Certainly, just looking at where they're at and trying to understand the outskirts of current AI technology and how they're meshing networks and having these intuitive networks they're trying to build. Even the most complex aren't near how much processing power the human brain has. So I don't disagree with you there, but it's not. Would you agree that it's not, we're not stepping out on a ledge too far in at least thinking about these things? And also that, if true, I mean, children, when they're little, they play house, right? They try and model what it's like to be an adult.
Yeah. So, like, if I could take a stretch and if I'm interpreting what you're saying correctly, and do correct me if I'm wrong, is that once intelligence does occur within AI, meaning that there is an interpretive sense, and it's really it's really alternative teaching, right? I mean, it's artificial intelligence in teaching itself is what we're talking about.
Yes. We've removed ourselves from teaching it.
Right. It's truly reached a point of autonomous and of being autonomous, and then what is the life cycle of that base point of intelligence? You know, what does that look like? I think, yeah, I mean, it sounds reasonably correct with what you're describing it as, what it could be. Mm-hmm. You know, understanding all the base level of existence, right? Mm-hmm. And then kind of working its way up to more intelligent triangulation of senses and interpretation to become its own consciousness. I don't think you're wrong with what it could eventually, like, what the experience could be for AI once it becomes its own entity. I just feel like it's something that we're probably not going to be alive for.
Well, you know, and that's interesting that you said probably not be alive for, because what I found most interesting about the possibilities of this theorem is that what it says about our own reality and the potentials. Now, I refuse to speculate about what's beyond death, because let's face it, we all go through death's door by ourselves. It doesn't matter how much the group around your deathbed loves you, deep down, they're glad they're not going with you. So if we don't know ultimately what's on the other side of death's door, or what was before birth, we can only deal between those two points.
Yeah.
But if it's true, what it might mean is that we are in a static, actually static universe, potentially, if it's applicable to the bigger cosmological and quantum questions of the day. that we live in a static universe, and only because our processing is delayed are we even experiencing what we would call time. Time, therefore, is an illusion. There is no second law of thermodynamics. And
I think CERN is closer to what the future evolution of our species can be, more so than AI. Like, so machine learning, right? That's what we're basically talking about, right?
Correct.
But machine learning means that they're learning from humans, and machine teaching is kind of the next step of what is what's being spoken, talked about in most Silicon Valley circles right now, right? Which is basically like the next step, right? But it's still very simplistic things. My point being is, like, I feel like your comparisons in CERN. Well, I feel like if humans are taking a step in trying to create the, like, I'm trying to tie and back solve your reference to death.
I see where you're going with that, and I thank you so much for the context, and it also. What I love about the Socratic method is it's the only method I know of whereby two humans can try and establish through questioning a common enough ground to actually understand each other and see each other, so to speak, and have real meaningful communication. Let me restate this. If I understand what you just said, you thought that I was tying in that this was ultimately about machine learning, and that I may incorrectly was tying it to CERN. Did I catch that correctly?
No, actually. I was trying to draw my own parallel to that, actually. I was just kind of taking the references you'd use, because you'd mentioned the death reference, right? Ultimately what we're trying to let me distill down what I'm interpreting you're saying.
Sure.
You're trying to understand how us as a spiritual and humanistic being is going to evolve next. Whether that and you believe that to some degree it's going to be independent of a humanistic approach, and it's going to exist in a independent being through AI.
That's an excellent observation. That certainly is a part of it, not one that I had consciously set out to do, but that is some part of it, I guess. The meaning of reality is a part of that. But to be clear,
sure.
What I'm examining is what is true in this world of whatever post-truth world, whatever people are calling it nowadays. I've always been my algorithm since I was as a little kid. I've always questioned. I've always been looking for the truth, and not something that's unassailable by anything.
But the truth of what?
The truth of the nature, something that I can believe in and stand on and not have pulled out from underneath me, so to speak, if I'm standing.
So would that be like the truth of existence?
Right, because I came into the world and I was raised Assemblies of God, evangelical, holy rolling, pew sure. jumpers, and yeah. I've had a wild and woolly life. And so, sure. I mean, my journey started with, here's a God of love. He loved you so much. His son died on the cross, et cetera, et cetera. I don't want to go too deep into the religion.
Yeah, no, I had similar upbringing, and I've had we could have discussions about that. I guess what I'm trying to understand is, like, what are you trying to back solve to? And
I'm trying to resolve death.
Is it true? Is it truth? Truth of existence?
Truth of existence and death.
Sure. So, I guess, into the point of whether or not death is a termination or a continuance.
Yes, and personally, have you read the part where, I mean, energy cannot be destroyed, it only changes state?
I mean, that's a law, right?
Right, part of the basis of the E equals MC squared. But if energy cannot be destroyed, that means the energy that permeates everything
transforms.
Is all one thing. That means ultimately, fundamentally, we are all one. If we are all one, it's me and
from
you
a physical level.
Like, yeah, it's like if we're one, it's like there was one that existed and it was like, oh, wow, I am. And then he started talking to himself and then he was two or she or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that all of existence essentially is that one pondering itself. And I'm looking for mathematical foundations of that because physics seems to be proving that out.
How so? Right.
In the I mean, nothing is ever fact, I guess, in science, right? That's why science is so wonderful. They just have things that are more likely than others. If you drop a rock,
there's a spectrum.
Right. And there's a spectrum. I like that. I haven't heard that in a while. Bravo. You get the ding, 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 ding. You get the award for the first hour of the day in the Pacific Coast time zone. That's yeah. Go ahead.
Keep going.
I like where you're going.
So there is a spectrum, right? I mean, there are – truth is a very precarious thing. And it requires a lot of delicate definition as to – universal, you know, what is universal, what is personal, what is individual, what is, I mean, there's many applications to truth, right? But the beauty of truth is that it is always true. There, it's never not what it is supposed to be in the sense, in and of itself for the application of what it's meant to be, right? Whether that's physical, mental, emotional, it really doesn't matter if you're trying to apply it to a human form or a physical universal form. There are certain laws that are always followed, right? And then I guess again, continuing on the spectrum, like it's then it goes on to theory, and then just to a less and less tested basis. But I get your point. So you're really coming from a So I'm just trying to understand your origin story, which it sounds like is from a myopic, religious, probably like really like a kind of a unique cult-esque sect within Christianity, right? Which is kind of what you said Assembly of God, right?
Assemblies of God, yeah. Essentially, they believe in the healing power of prayer. They speak in tongues.
Yep. Yep, exactly. And that comes down to a misinterpretation of Corinthians, for the most part, comparing to most Protestant religions. So
I also have a degree in a minor in anthropology and sociology. I have a degree in history and a minor in double minor in anthropology and sociology. And that was my all Sunday school teacher's worst nightmare because I'd always ask the question no one could answer.
I can believe it. I'm sure you still have enemies from that shit. That's awesome.
Yeah. So do you know the definition of truth, the actual what Merriam-Webster dictionary or what?
No, what, actually, I don't. I don't. I have my own definition, but I say that saying that I guess I could come up with it, but I really have not written it down. So, but well, Merriam-Webster has a better thoughtful answer than I do.
Well, you know, actually, they don't, to be honest with you. This is the way my brain works. If somebody were to say, build the Sears Tower, and had never built a building in my life, I would probably start at the top and build it all the way down to the bottom. And when I got to the foundation, I'd go, oh, a foundation. Oh, that would have made things so much easier. But I get to the foundation is my point. So I went on an exploration of truth. So I went to the dictionary right off years ago. And here it is, truth, noun, the quality or state of being true. And when I read that, I was like, oh my God, how can a definition define itself by itself?
That's a fair point.
That which is true or in accordance with fact or reality, noun, the truth, a fact or belief that is accepted as true. Thanks, guys. You really cleared that one up for me. And then he goes, how would you define truth? Truth is most often used to mean being in accord with fact or reality, or fidelity to an original or standard. Truth is also sometimes defined in modern contexts as an idea of truth to self, I guess talking about subjectivity, or authenticity. Yeah. Well, that threw me for a loop. I was so upset about that, but it did lead me to this. That part where it says truth is also defined as a modern context as an idea of truth for itself, and that where is fidelity, fidelity to an original or standard, and people say nobody's perfect, right? Nothing perfect. I've heard that said. What do you think about that?
It's founded on cultural or circular reasoning.
But based on that definition of truth, is it fair to say, in your opinion, is it fair to say, or ponder subjectively, in my existence, as far as I understand, there is no other copy of me anywhere in existence. I am uniquely existing. I am the only me in existence. Nobody can do me better than me. In fact, I do me perfectly.
Sure.
So I use that thought to comfort myself most days.
Yeah, I get it.
Really, I think I could go all kinds of different places with it. It's such an interesting thought to have if we're all one. And I think there's two, I've identified two major means of communicating, statements and questions. And I'm trying to live in the question.
Sure. No, I get that. I don't know that I would say we're all one, but I think we're all part of one.
That's more accurate. That is absolutely more accurate.
Maybe we're all part of one individual expressed.
Yeah. You know, if I were in a static world and I was inserted into it, or if I was just me, right? If you had all understanding at once and you expanded into the entire universe and it's really where I got to at first, I always think of the worst case scenario. Then being God, being everything, must be hell because it's static forever. Ugh. Well, the implication.
I guess I don't understand why it would be static. I mean, I don't know that it would be hell to be God. Because you have full concept. One of my favorite analogies was like, you know, you're standing on top of the Empire State Building and you're watching, and an individual's life is like watching a parade, right? And you can observe the front and the back.
Yes. Right?
And everything in between.
Yeah.
But you're not dictating what's happening before. You just have perspective of the entire thing.
Because it's parts of one, like you said, individual, subjective, independent action parts. And recently, have you ever seen Morgan Freeman's Through the Wormhole?
I have, and
what'd you think?
I didn't really like it. I didn't care for it.
What was it? What was it you didn't like about it?
I mean, I'll say that it's definitely been a few years since I watched it, but I feel like it's been, the explanation was very textbook.
I saw one thing that I thought was fascinating, and they examined how information, this PhD was examining how information traveled through an ant colony and plotting it. And when he was done, he was like, somebody on the team was like, that looks familiar. And they pulled up I don't know how they got to it, but they pulled up the brain problem solving brain pattern exhibited when a chimpanzee is solving a problem. And essentially the group communication dynamics of an ant colony very much mimicked and reflected chimpanzee's problem solving pattern. And I thought that was awfully interesting, that the interactions of a colony in and of itself was creating something bigger than itself. Almost something was coming into existence by their action together and communally. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. I mean, I get that, I guess. But to me, that's more of a successful protocol that can probably apply to multiple species, multiple beings, right?
Ding, ding, ding. So could that be an – see, I'm a believer in the theory of same mechanics, different machines. So I think physics fundamentally, everyone's been looking and talking much ado about the theory, the universal theory of the universe. I was like, how could you have a universal theory of the universe? Well, if it's the same mechanics all the way up and all the way down,
yeah,
why not? It'd be like a fractal.
That's exactly right.
So if it's all of creation is essentially a fractal, which is a closed system, right? That repeating patterns, but not the same exact pattern. It's never the same twice in a closed system ad infinitum. Yeah, I could see that happening, a theory of one. So for me, it was like a theory of communities. Each community of like objects creates, in its interaction together, creates something bigger than itself that it doesn't necessarily perceive or interact with, but nevertheless could only exist because of the interaction of the community underneath it or above it, all tied together. I think too much, man.
Not really. I mean, I think that makes sense. That definitely makes sense. And I could be certainly guilty of the same thing. But no, I think that makes sense.
In Colorado, what time is it there in Colorado? It's mountain time, right? It's like almost 2 or 3.
Yeah, 2:10.
And you have to work tomorrow?
Oh yeah, but when you're one of the heads of the company, it's okay. I can show up a little late.
Oh yeah. Yeah. All the joys of being the head. I think it's an exciting time to be alive operationally. And safety, oddly enough, I think is the key. And not because of the implicated liability insurance reasons, right? The company that I was working for before, they actually said safety first. And I had to go out in front of my guys and say safety first. They were like, oh, they're just trying to cover insurance. Somebody's always going to get injured. There's always going to be an accident or incident. I said, try not thinking that way and see what we can
do. Right, yeah, exactly. Like you're creating your own fucking reality of fucking injury. Exactly. But
no.
So we're in oil and gas, but it's more acquisition driven. So we're really more of a passive investor. So luckily we don't have to deal with like field crews or anything like that. It's all from remote offices. So like an Anadarko or an Oxy or an Exxon.
Yeah, I know those companies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we'll be a joint partner in their wells, but we're not the operator. We're just sending a check to them in the mail. So it's a very passive kind of investment. So which is good in the sense that we don't have to. I've worked for operators in the past, and to your point of like safety first, I mean, that's a huge, huge thing, but it's also a huge liability and a huge effort to maintain and make sure you're kind of, just keeping a protocol that's effective.
Is it
for many, right?
Why do you say that? What would make it difficult to maintain?
Difficult because everybody has to be, because people have to be mindful, right? That's the issue. It's attention span. I mean, we're in a world, man, where freaking, I don't even know what the ratio is, but most people I know are on Adderall, right? Or some other medication that is supposedly enabling them to retain their memory and focus, right?
Uh-huh.
And
it sticks
and to, so anything, to me.
Methamphetamine, actually. It's one covalent bond off of methamphetamine.
Yeah, exactly. And so to that point, like that's one reason. The other reason is just being mindful, right? And you're dealing with unnatural things, and inevitably something is bound to go wrong. I mean, it happens. It does happen, no matter how much training you put into it. And so, but that's the kind of liability you can absorb when you're like a multi tens of billions of dollar company. But we chose the company we started was really more focused on kind of a portfolio theory investment thesis of where, you know, you're directly investing with these operators. You're not controlling it. You're not operating with it. You're just trusting like kind of the best in class people that are doing a good job at developing the economic wells. And, you know, you're buying insurance for the well. So if something goes wrong, you know, it's still you're kind of one step removed from it and insurance is there to step in. But we don't have the staff. We're not worried about staffing people, right? It's up to the operator to do that.
You know, it's interesting that you should put I had hit on the idea that in tying some of the things that we discussed earlier, essentially safety theory today is us being a colony of ants, sending out all of our ants, and we want them all to come back. None get stepped on, none get washed out. None get eaten by an aardvark, right?
We give too much merit to life.
But why isn't it possible? And so you got to think of the worst case scenario. It's because if you don't believe it's true, safety ultimately is the moneymaker. It's the key to being the most successful company in existence if everyone buys into it, because your bottom line is stupendous and everyone believes in it and lives it at home and at work. They don't take off their hard hat and then go work on their air conditioner on the roof without any tie off, safety boots or hard hat. They do that at home. When you reach that kind of level, watch out. That company that's doing that, they've put people first, not money. And in doing so, and all being good at what they do, money is just a natural occurrence of what they do. But that's not their focus. We have yet to experience that shift because people of our age, and I'm guessing you're about middle-aged, maybe 38, 36. That was my 36. Second. 36.
Pretty good, man.
Is that the ones who are running things are still of the old school. And I mean old school in that I used to ride out with my mom as we took cases of beer out to the rigs. My dad was at, and they would be smoking pot and doing lines while they were changing out the drills. You know? We've come a long way since that time. But we're not there yet. Because it's still who you know, not the merit of what you do.
That's fair, especially when you're talking about being on a rig for months at a time in West Texas. Like, that's a very limited demographic of people that can actually sustain that lifestyle.
Yeah, no, they got those automated rigs now that can be run by two people and joysticks. Yeah, we just got to show 277,000 acres of our land in West Texas, but we got the mineral rights.
Damn. That's a pink volume.
It's a big chunk of flat land with tarantulas, snakes, coyotes, turtles, scorpions is about it.
Yeah. Certainly. A few Mexican.
I was born into a town where we were outnumbered from birth. So I grew up outnumbered, and it's interesting how white culture works when they're in the minority. They're very nice and very accommodating. So when I went into the Marines, I had thought that racism had been beat, that was a thing of the past. Boy, was I shocked when I got out into the Marine Corps and the door shut and suddenly we're not all dark green and light green Marines. What did you just say? Yeah. So yeah, the world has been shocked for me. One shock after another.
No, that's true. But shit, man. I mean, think about the improvement that we made in the last 100 years, comparably. Then compare that to 200 and 500 and then 1,000.
I have thought about that. I think of, personally, in my experience, what I've observed in my historical studies and religious studies is that religion seems to me to be the best indicator if you were to take all of human recorded history and call it a timeline of one giant individual, right? From the time we started writing cuneiform in Sumer back in ancient Mesopotamia to today, that was the beginning of hunter-gatherers and kids. Now we're in our mid to late 20s. We're obsessed about talking and thinking about ourselves. And it's a question whether or not we're going to end up in a deadly car crash because we're dumb, being too dangerous, or we're going to wise up and make it to our midlife crisis as a species. Yeah. Well,
what are your thoughts on global warming and climate change?
Yeah, that's the question. So that's the part of the cartoon that I've developed, the Cave 2.0. The premise is that in each human age, there is a crux. There's a question that needs to be answered. And if it's not answered correctly, whatever correctly is, then a representative, the cave appears, and a representative of that age essentially goes into that cave through whatever means and becomes a prisoner in a timeless cave. And I've got 9 different prisoners from 9 different ages, and they are cannot be released from their prison in the cave until humanity makes the right choice. And in the first episode, we meet Meh. Meh. It's all about Meh. Meh from a hunter-gatherer society about 11,800 years ago. And halfway through, we meet our newest representative, Red, from Albuquerque, New Mexico. Bright red, dyed hair, maybe about 12 to 14 years old. And he's just entering the cave and discovering the previous prisoner, which is a question whether she's a hippie or she was raised by hippies, and her moment, her crux was the Me Too. So there's a lot of interesting questions that can be raised in exploring the different timelines and storylines and the interaction between the two. There's something for the deep thinkers like me and you and others, and it's going to be enjoyable anyway for the action and adventure and sci-fi kind of fiction lovers.
Sure.
But they're only 3-minute cartoons. It's 1,440 hand-drawn panels, so it takes me a while.
I'll bet, man. That sounds pretty cool, though.
Yeah, well, I've never done it before, but dang it, I'm hoping to have it done no later than the end of the month. So I hope you can.
Yeah, man. So what's your goal with the platform?
Oh, the goal with the platform? Just to explore all the different questions. It seems like it was going to be a painting, a complex painting, but when I asked this animator that I'd met who did the California Raisins Heard It Through the Grapevine commercial, I said, what do I do at 46, moving from oil and gas ops and logistics to the art world? How the hell do I get noticed? Because I've got skill, I've got talent, I've got good ideas. I can't get them in front of the right person. He said, make a cartoon. So that's what I've been doing the last month, working on this cartoon. Then maybe I can get hired.
Well, the crazy thing is like we can never forget our audience, right? I mean, that's critical piece number one. If we feel like we have a message to conveying, and
I think about the audience, but I think also in being true to yourself. If you ever gone to see a band and they're having so much fun, you know it didn't matter if you and the rest of the crowd were there. They would be doing this anyway. But it's fun to watch them. More fun than somebody up there trying to earn bucks. So,
yeah, but entertainment and understanding are two different things, I guess would be my point.
I think it's fairly entertaining, but yeah, that is point well taken, is to keep it where it's entertaining and not too cerebral.
Right.
Yeah.
No, that's true. So are you, I guess as far as like the live cast thing, how many times have you done the live cast?
So this would be my fourth hour. The previous hours were accidentally erased, through, an unfortunate, glitch in CastBox, but they rectified it very well, I might add. I didn't get my episodes back, but here I am live casting again. I do have another podcast I did called In the Fighting Hole, a Marines exploration service, where I was interviewing people who are successful and love what they do, and when in their experience did they find themselves in a metaphorical, spiritual, or emotional fighting hole, and what did they do to get out of it? And I was trying to reach transitioning Marines and veterans who are coming out of the service, who, after you've spent some time in the service, you come out in the real world. Having so many choices can be very daunting and intimidating. So just having something they could listen to and have them think about what it is they want to do, before they jump off in it and spend 20 years doing something they're good at or okay at, but really they always wanted to do something else.
Right.
Maybe sense. Save them some time. So there's it's on fightinghole.vet. I'm trying to change the format into a sketch comedy format called The Netting, a Marine Service News Network. We bring a spare call to your front door. Like 40s, 50s format. And have like five or six roving reporters interviewing people, but with the 50s mentality. So like,
if yeah,
you, I'm interviewing somebody talking about women's rights. I go, oh, you're what?
I'm watching Mad Men right now. So like, I guess to your point of about the 50s era, like that's such a, I understand where you're going with that.
And I liked, you know, the USO shows, Bob Hope, Red Skelton and whatnot. Some of their jokes were so lame, but everybody would laugh anyway. But it's just kind of like the whole make America great idea. I hear it. I get it. But were we ever great? Have we reached our greatness yet? Maybe we haven't reached our greatest moment. But just humor is my way of battling everything. I can't. No point in fighting it. And I think humor is much more enjoyable, and you can still get just about as much accomplished as not. I started doing stand-up about a month ago, too, since I'm doing all these new things for the first time. I just did a show tonight, my first actual solid set, without getting bottles staring at me. Huh? Oh, in Oakland? In Oakland, California, yeah. They got open mic all over the place here.
That's a hell of a fucking place to start.
I mean, everybody likes to focus on the white boy. Everyone keeps thinking I'm a Jew because only Jews do comedy, right? So every white person's going to be Jewish. I'm like, no. I mean, I did practice it on accident.
This guy's fucking Seinfeld's cousin. Yeah, no, I get it. That's funny shit.
Oh, dude, but what's funnier is I was checking out Judaism on my way to boot camp. And they asked me, and I said, well, I'm checking out Judaism. So they put Jewish on my dog tags. And I was the only Jew in the entire battalion. And I was going to tell them that I wasn't a Jewish, but my last name sounds Jewish, Blumberg. But I went to the first Shabbat at the naval base. And I was the only recruit in the battalion that got to go off base because freedom of religion and all that. And they have lots of bagels and soda and ice cream. And after the end of my first Sabbath, I was like, maybe I am a Jew. I get back to, I got back to boot camp.
I'm enjoying the hell out of this.
I got back to boot camp and the drill instructor, Staff Sergeant Blankenship, calls me in. He goes, Blumberg, did you enjoy it? And I said, yes, sir, the recruit did enjoy Sabbath. He goes, okay, now I don't care if you're Jewish or not, but you are not going to convert anybody in this platoon. Do you hear me? Sir, yes, sir. He goes, the reason being is they're all here and there's all kinds of different things. If everybody could find out what you're getting and I know what you got, everybody will be Jewish. It wouldn't matter if it was the Buddhist serving ice cream on Sunday morning, everyone would be Buddhist. Or if you could nap in the New Age discussion, everybody goes there and nap. But do you understand me? Nobody is to become a Jew. Yes, sir. So almost near the end, somebody was genuinely interested, and I tested him and then went to the drill instructor to see if it was okay that he went with me, and he allowed it. But 2 weeks later, we're doing night inspection where they check with a flashlight, you're shaved, did you shave clean enough or anything? And I was always having to be next to him because I was banker recruit because I was the only Jew. And he just put the flashlight down on Wilkes' stomach.
Just the Inquisition here. They weren't checking like to make sure the drapes match the curtains, were they?
No. They do it to see if you've And he stops on his tummy, and I didn't know that Welch had gotten a little bit of a tummy from the ice cream and everything, and he would just flash the flashlight in my face and look at me, and I'd be like, yeah, incriminatingly. He would mess with me too, man. Rosh Hashanah, we just had Rosh Hashanah, and he'd go, Blumberg, and I'd go up to him. When you'd have to report to the duty hut by going to the front of the door, slamming on the duty hut door, going, Coop Blumberg, reporting is ordered. And he'd go, Blumberg, what's that holiday today? Rosh Hashanah, sir. You go, oh, bless you, bless you. Whew. Are you okay, Blumberg? Yes, sir. Okay, I'm sorry. The sneeze confused me. What's today? And I go, Rosh Hashanah, sir. And he goes, bless you, bless you. Are you okay? Seriously. And he kept me at his door for 30 minutes doing Rosh Hashanah.
Oh, no joke. Shit.
Yeah. And
holy
people,
shit.
People would throw their pennies and quarters at me and go, aren't you going to pick it up, did you? And I'd be like, dude, man, I'm not even converted. But they go, what's it? I'd have the yarmulke on. Because the added benefit was I didn't have to eat the eggs and ham MREs. They were the worst. And they go, what's that on your head, Blumberg? And to be funny, I'd go, oh, I've left the propeller at home, sir. Yeah. Get all protective of their Jew.
That's pretty fucking funny.
It was weird.
That's pretty good, man.
Well, it's been a good talk. I hope you call in. In the future, we'll probably do the same thing and just open up on sciencedaily.com and read today's hot headlines and try not to get too deep.
Is that kind of the format, though? Like, you typically will read off of the kind of the daily reads or what?
Yeah, the daily reads just to kind of stimulate conversation, because every show can't be about AI and simulated reality or – God,
fucking people's heads explode.
Yeah,
that's right, man. I mean, so to the point. So my buddy Phil and I are doing our own podcast as well. So we've utilized the live cast piece on Castbox as kind of like a practice format.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but we're definitely going to do more of an interview style, and not that all are going to be super deep, but we're trying to have fun with everything. But anyway, love to have you as a guest at some point too. So.
Oh, I'd love to. Yeah, that would be amazing. I got about 12 interviews done, 5 put out there. And then Memorial Day came and I discovered I had PTSD, which I didn't quite know about and had some memories. So that got delayed.
Okay.
But, you know, it is what it is. Just be authentic is what I'd say.
Yeah, no, and that's fair, and I think that's kind of the goal too, because it's I don't know, with where I'm at in oil and gas, like I have access to a lot of, you know, local celebrities or regional celebrities and athletes, that kind of thing.
Absolutely.
I don't want it to be about that. It's more about, I'd much rather have normal everyday people and and kind of having the concept of kind of a silver lining, right, where people have, you know, everybody has at least one story where the worst thing they ever thought was going to that was happening to them turned out to be the best.
Yeah.
And so really kind of just playing on the silver lining, encouraging people to engage in their fears to help, you know, better define who the hell they are. And there's a lot of growth, like anything growth driven is kind of where we're at, all the way from that to entrepreneurial business related type stuff. My buddy, both, they'll have many businesses, that kind of thing too. So it's going to be a pretty diverse deal, but anything that brings value, so is kind of the goal.
That, and I love that. That's a great goal. That is an amazing goal. And I would say that this is, we're probably entering the golden age of podcasts. Two of the people that I interviewed just started their own podcasts. Well, let's see, Pete Turner, I met. He's the host of the Break It Down podcast. Amazing podcast. He's a former Marine. He's got great guests and interviews. He's on all the time. Donnie Bovine, he does a podcast on being the best entrepreneurial you can be. And then the other two I interviewed, who just started one, is Jason Madden out of Boston. He was in the Marines and the Army. And then Vet Pivot just got launched by Adam Bratz. That's going to be a really good one because he just got voted the most influential online veteran influencer on the net this last year. And he's a funny guy. He used to be an Air Force drill instructor, but he, like I, very frustrated at there's 65 plus thousand veteran service organizations out there, each with their own little thing that's going to solve it all. And they're all working crossways to each other and losing authenticity. And we got vets that are homeless. Why do we have homeless vets this day and age? That should end. It should have been solved already. But
yeah, absolutely agree.
Challenges, and I think they're going to be the three most influential in the veteran community in the 2020. So you might listen to some of those podcasts. I think they're going to be good.
That'd be great, man. I'm trying to understand. Like, I'm not terribly familiar with Castbox. Is there a secure way to like share my contact info with you?
You know what? If you go to yobiworks.art or send an email to yobi@yobiworks.art. That's YOBIWORKS.
YOBI.
Say that one more
time. Okay.
Right. Y is in YOLO. O is in ONO.
YOBI. Yep.
WORKS.
Okay.
.art. And send me an email that's on my own server with a website. I had to teach myself how to design websites this last year for the Marine Corps League. I was a communication officer for. So that's how I got that. Kind of fell into it. But it's been a pleasure. Cool, man. Thanks everybody for listening. And I certainly might be inviting you to co-host with me again. I think it was good. I'll give you a heads up on the topic and the subject, and so you'll have some kind of outline. I was envisioning something like Coast to Coast with Art Bell at night, where he would just talk about whatever.
Well, by the end, we can work with that.
By the end, you'll step out of your house and start looking for UFOs. Chupacabra.
Exactly. That's awesome. All right, man. Well, appreciate it. And great combo. And look forward to talking to you again.
All right. Same here. All right. Well, thank you. And to everybody, we're winding down. This has been an episode of Cave 2.0, where it's an online live debate forum talking about the nature of reality and science and scientific discovery. A platform, Cave 2.0, is also my first animated series that I'm working on that will be released soon from Yobi Works. That's YOBIWORKS.art. And also discussing from time to time and refining the AI simulated life theorem, which I think potentially indicates that there is no second law of thermodynamics and we all live in a simulated reality. But that's just for fun. I don't want anybody to get too concerned about their own reality. Remember, it's all subjective. So what it is for me may not be for you. Also, I'm doing a service series of 10 paintings exploring service. Doesn't matter if it's yard service, military service, or coffee service. I've got 10 paintings that I'm working on. I've got 4 complete, 6 more to go. And I will be posting the remainder of the paintings or photographs that I've taken that are been chosen to go into the service series. The purpose of the 10 service series will make 10 prints. The models in the paintings get the original, and then we have 10 prints. There will only be 10 prints of each one of these paintings, and we're going to do an auction for fundraising charity money to go to PTSD veterans. So at least 25% is going to be going to research for PTSD, not only veterans, but anybody who's been suffering from PTSD. There's some exciting, exciting research out there today. And I'm excited and hopeful that we'll be able to contribute to that. If you want to learn more about me, also as well, you can go to patreon.com/YobiWorks. That's YOBIWORKS. My nickname is Yobi, as in Yobi Bear, YOBIBEAR. Nickname I acquired a while back, and which is stuck. Some people know me by nothing else than Yobi. But again, this is Adrian Yobi Blumberg thanking you for joining us tonight. Hope you join us again next time when we have our next live cast on The Cave 2.0. Free your life. Blumberg, out! Thanks. Thanks, Case the Mace. You can become a participant buddy or participant patron at www.patreon.com/YobiWorks. Now, I don't want anybody to be just observing what I'm doing. I like it when people get involved. So if you go there and you like what you see, you too can be a part of the growth of YobiWorks and serve, exploring, redefining what service is and what it means and who you are within it. And also serving through the arts and multimedia. So that could be the web, UX design, that could be audiobook narration, it could be stand-up comedy, improvisation, duets, monologues, acting, voice talent, voiceovers. That's Howl Wolf. That's the first and third Sunday of every month here in San Leandro. Find Your Art Day and Howl Wolf. First Sunday of the month is from 2 to 6, and the third Sunday of the month, Howl Wolf and Find Your Art Night is from 5 or 4 to 9. And Find Your Art Day and Find Your Art Night is all the different art supplies that you could want. And we encourage you to join us and discover what arts you're good at. It could be watercolor, it could be oil pastels, it could be crayons, who knows? Point being, if you have fun, we call it art. Self-guided. Howl Wolf, on the other hand, is more of a collaborative workshop where we work those different skills that you would like to work on, whether you're a professional, an amateur, or aspiring actor. It's always good to join and network with those who have the same and similar interests and work out those vocal cords and maybe narrate that favorite book you've always wanted to hear in audiobook form. We're going to be here at least once a week on Livecast. More as we grow and get our routine and things solid. Again, thanks for joining us. This is Yobi with YobiWorks.art. And you can also fund us and become a participant buddy, which is someone who participates but isn't contributing as of yet, or small baby steps, or a participant patron, someone who's actively supporting us, perhaps through their dollars, at least until we collaboratively can come up with a way of supporting ourselves and each other without needing money necessarily. I see a post-money world, just not there yet. All right, till then, gotta eat, gotta live. Thanks for signing in. Talk to you later.